Welcome to Our Thoughts Tonight. Join us as we chat in a mellow mood about music, philosophy, psychology, and anything else that will come to mind. Enjoy.
Our Thoughts Tonight.
Welcome, everybody.
Ashok is here.
Hello.
Zach is here.
What's up, kid?
And I'm your host, Noam Chomsky.
Oh,
curveball!
I can't do the whole I can't do the whole trend with like Alex Trebek. Give me this for 400. All right, Noam Chomsky. Yeah, right. Noam Chomsky. Noam Chomsky. Thought Experiments 101.
Our topic tonight is thought experiments, the trolley problem. I'm sure everyone is familiar with where
we talked about it in the previous episode.
We have
the ethics episode.
Yeah, it's like where there's two railroads and the train is going somewhere and you've got a lever and there's 10 people tied up on one side and one person tied up on the other. Which person do you save, the one person or the group of people? That's essentially the gist of the most popular thought experiment.
Yeah.
Speaking of Noam Chomsky, we haven't announced on the podcast.
Oh yeah, I think.
No, we were talking.
Oh, during the episode. Yeah. That's right.
So announce it.
Yeah. So during the last episode, I think it was the last episode, we were in contact with Noam Chomsky. What ended up happening was upcoming interview and talk and discussion with Noam Chomsky. He agreed. So we're looking towards a early next year. So it's going to be cool. We're going to talk about a lot of things, about politics, some psychology, some linguistics.
The books he wrote.
Yeah. So that's very exciting.
Day-to-day life.
Yeah. So everybody be on the lookout for that and spread the word so everybody can, you know.
And who is Noam Chomsky?
Who? Oh, man.
So people could have some kind of broad aspect.
Noam Chomsky is the most quoted person on the planet right now.
Modern day philosopher.
One of the most cited scholars of all time.
Yeah.
There you go.
Not really much. He's not technically a philosopher, but he kind of is.
But he's in like the philosophy section.
I mean, yeah.
In a bookstore.
I mean, the guy is an academic.
15 different sections in a bookstore.
He doesn't call himself a philosopher.
No, he doesn't call himself a philosopher, but.
He connects.
The guy's got so much knowledge.
Man. Yeah. So he was known for his his cognitive psychology. He was known for his linguistics, particularly I think we were talking about it last time. What was the exact thing, like how words or language is very much reference-less it's kind of going to like some Quinn ideas. And he's famous for that, but he's also famous for his political ideas, he proposes anarchism.
Yeah. One of my favorite things about Noam Chomsky is like him saying to interviewers, like, you're only looking at the footnotes of the situation. Like, things like that. I'm like, man, this guy's on the money.
He knows
what he's talking about.
Yeah, he's also nice of, like, you know, he doesn't
even... Well-spoken.
Yeah, I remember, what was his name? Sacha Baron Cohen?
Sacha Baron
Cohen. Yeah, that one interview he had with Noam Chomsky.
Oh, my gosh, you're right, with Ali G, right?
Yeah, and Noam Chomsky was, like, super respectful, even though the guy's like, yeah, man, you know, like, his old...
Dude, there's probably, like... To be honest with you, there, like in situations like that, especially if it's like in a movie, there's some planning that goes into that.
Oh yeah, I'm sure too.
And like,
but he's like that with a lot of other interviews too.
I know, but I'm saying Sasha was probably like, "This is what I'm gonna do. This is my script. This is don't take it personally."
Well,
like,
sometimes
this is just
he doesn't do that.
I know.
I was gonna say like Sasha's usually not all the time, but usually
he's
not scripted.
Like, sporadic.
He gets like candid. Trump, too. He didn't tell Trump shit, and he...
Well, I mean, like, there's a difference, though, between Noam Chomsky and Trump.
Oh, you think he actually would warn Noam Chomsky?
If Sacha Baron Cohen, like, respected somebody, he would give them some kind of heads up.
Yeah, you're right.
If he didn't, like he did with Rudy Giuliani.
Oh, yeah.
There was no heads up.
No, he didn't. Yeah.
You know there's no heads up.
I think you're right.
When you watch that movie, you know there's no heads up. He's like, oh, let me take off my pants. I'm like, dude, you what? What is happening right now? Like,
I think you're right, though. That's a good point.
Yeah.
So before we get into thought experiments, as always, Crucem Sanctum. Welcome back, everybody, to Our Thoughts Tonight. So, again, our topic tonight is thought experiments. So, we have a couple of thought experiments that we haven't come up with these, but You know, they're on, you know, they're online, and thought experiments can go from anywhere from like, you know, mathematical thought experiments, philosophical, psychological, political. So probably all over the spectrum a little bit.
Physics as well.
Physics. Yeah, that's a big one. Murat, did you want to start us off with the thought experiments?
Yeah.
So we're just going to go through a list of these, and just discuss some of them.
So this one I found, I thought it was pretty interesting. It might be popular. I'm not sure. This one is called Cyril's Chinese Room.
Oh, I've heard of that, yeah.
Imagine yourself alone in a room following a computer program for responding to Chinese characters slipped under the door. You do not understand Chinese, and yet, by following the program for manipulating symbols and numerals, just as a computer does, you send appropriate strings of Chinese characters back out under the door. And this leads those outside to mistakenly suppose there is a Chinese speaker in the room. Does the person in the room, along with the computer program, understand Chinese? This thought experiment is a metaphor for artificial intelligence.
I've come across like multiple times.
So the person is locked in a room.
Yeah.
They don't know Chinese.
Yeah.
And somebody's slipping Chinese characters under the door, and they're trying to figure out Chinese characters basically to communicate.
Yeah, but in like a computational way, basically. So it kind of connects with like, kind of actually does connect with some like, you know, consciousness debates. Basically, like, does that person actually know Chinese, or are they, or is it just like the merit of their function? Like, and it actually goes, there's a, that famous paper by, oh my God, Alan Turing. He talks about like stuff like this with, you know, he's kind of a supporter for like more materialist, more computational methods of consciousness. And he would say, it's kind of a functionalist approach where it's like, if the guy can produce some sort of Chinese sentence and it serves, and it's, the function is being fulfilled, the guy knows Chinese. That's what like he would say, right? Some objections are like, that doesn't mean he necessarily knows Chinese. Just because the function is being met does not mean the person actually knows Chinese, nor the computer. It's kind of a famous argument. I'm not really, I mean, I have my own opinions, but I want to hear your guys' opinions first.
I would say if he can make out what they're saying, mm-hmm. and then respond, he's able to think creatively about an abstract concept like language.
Yeah.
So I would say he understands Chinese, maybe not very well,
yeah.
but if he can communicate using that language, he understands a portion of that language. Maybe yeah. he's not like a poet and yeah. can't write in Chinese to a level of somebody that's a native speaker, but I think I would say he knows Chinese.
Well,
or he or she, I should say.
With the experiment, like, he doesn't know what the symbols mean, does he? Or
he would have to figure it out.
Well, I mean, that's, I mean, it's basically impossible. So he has to basically use
not
them.
Not necessarily.
I mean, he basically has to figure out like the order. He can figure out the order they go in. Like, he can maybe figure out like, okay, I don't know. Like, he can't figure out like the subject. You know, is it an SVO language? Is it a whatever OBS? So he can maybe figure out like the order different symbols go in, but the actual meaning of the symbols are impossible.
Well, then you would say that people that break ciphers wouldn't understand, but in order to break the cipher, they would have to eventually come to understand what that cipher says. I guess someone like Skinner, B.F. Skinner, would say, well, how that person understands that language would be through stimuli. So, for instance, let's say the word dog. If you slip the word dog under the door and show a picture of a dog, I would eventually understand that those characters stand for dog.
Yeah.
But with people that break ciphers or deciphers, they can't necessarily
associate
the
cipher unless they know what it's related to.
Well, they can, because they have to break the cipher. They figure out what it means. Okay. Without anything like that.
Oh, okay.
So I think that would dispel that behaviorist point of view, even though that behaviorist point of view does have merit.
But so the thing that you're talking about, though, is like someone slips something in another language. It doesn't have to be Chinese. It could be anything. It could be Russian, Turkish, German, and you slip a card underneath, and then you see the picture with it. And then you slip another card under, and you do it over and over and over again. Eventually, the notation or like the writing of whatever language it is.
Yeah. They'll without the picture, right?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, without the picture. After a while, you could put flashcards under, like, after
just X random year. Characters with no representation, like yeah, dog. Okay.
But because, I can't speak for everybody, but if you have like a photogenic memory, like I do, mm-hmm. like if you see a picture of a dog, like he said, and then it says dog in Chinese over it, I would know that that's dog now.
Yeah.
After seeing it over and over.
Yeah.
And over.
No, yeah. If you knew it meant dog, yeah, you would. Yeah. But you don't know in this situation.
But in, in the cipher situation, it's like they're figuring it out with no basis whatsoever.
No basis, yeah.
No.
They don't know it means dog at all or anything for them.
There's no connection for them.
Yeah.
And they figure it out a lot of times.
Well, I mean, I don't know too much about ciphers, but like for example, like...
I watched the Da Vinci Code the other day. Leonardo da Vinci's in it, and it's like, oh, yeah, he's got this blueprint thing on a painting. Yeah. And
what were you
going to
say, Sugar?
Oh, I was going to say, like, I don't know too much about ciphers, but, like for example, when you're trying to figure out, like, different grammatical structures of other languages. I remember I had to do this for my linguistics class a few semesters ago, because you don't know what the words mean, but you can sort of go through them and figure out basically which part of the words, let's say a suffix, or maybe even if that word's a noun or not. I'm not sure if we got that far, but like you can kind of figure out some general structures of those words. You can't really figure out the meaning of those words unless maybe like, I mean, I really don't know how you can really, I mean, if you know, if ciphers can do it, there's usually probably a pattern that's universal that one can like follow. But like with Chinese, it's like, I don't want to say, me talking about Chinese would be kind of like, that's at the point of the thought experiment. I was just going to say like Chinese is so radically different. It's, you know, characterization, it's basically hieroglyphics, like advanced.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, exactly.
So that would actually make it maybe easier.
But I'm because saying, it's like, Chinese would make it easier because parts of each character stand for something.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
They're called radicals, I believe.
I don't know. I lean on the side that he doesn't actually know Chinese. I think there's a very big difference between functionality and the actual, like, does he actually know Chinese, right? Yeah. I think there's a split.
If he can speak it to the point where Chinese people are excited that someone that looks nothing like them can speak fluent Chinese without any hesitation whatsoever. Me being a white guy, if I can speak without any hesitation to you guys, like just by being around and studying it and learning it after X amount of years, you guys would be like astonished.
Yeah.
If you didn't know me. If I just walked into a Chinese restaurant, I'm just like, oh.
I mean, the basic similar, I mean, this is basically a functionalism versus basically any other theory kind of experiment.
So what would constitute like beyond functionalism?
Well, basically, that's the difficult problem. That's where it gets into like, you know, the not interactability of consciousness. No, like, for example, let me give an example, right? Let's say like someone says that like, you're going to like a Chinese restaurant, and they say, hey, say this to the server, say ni hao, I don't know, this phrase,
ni
right? But they don't actually know the meaning of the phrase, right? But they can basically, I mean, they can basically repeat, rules and repeat like orders and actually say these things. And the Chinese person understands what that person is saying. And for them, for functional purposes, they are speaking and they kind of know Chinese. It goes beyond just what that thing can do functionally. Like that's usually with like computers, like an AI. Just because they repeat information doesn't mean they really know that information.
Exactly.
They're not conscious.
That's what I'm about to say. That's what this ties into right here. It's like they go to the same Chinese restaurant for 4 months straight, right? They say the same thing. Ni hao. Na-na-na. And they're like, oh yeah, I know Chinese. Right? And then one day, same server that's there for 3 months just tries to have a full-on conversation with the guy.
Yeah.
Right? And then in that fucking millisecond, that guy realizes, oh, wow, I really don't know Chinese. Yeah. I've just been saying, hi,
but the
can
one
I get the chicken and rice? Yeah.
Like the one problem is, it's
you know?
But the one problem is,
it's like
you really cannot tell.
Like being cocky about.
No, I get what you're saying. The thing is, it's the one problem, though, is even if there's a distinction between function and actual knowledge of it, effectively, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Like, because like at least from an external point of view, the function is all that matters, right? So you just because that person doesn't know Chinese doesn't really mean much externally from him.
Yeah.
But maybe in truth he doesn't know logic. What?
I said ni hao. That means hello.
Oh yeah.
Well, I watched this comedian that was like, when people see me and I'm like, he's like, I'm Chinese. He's like, I'm half Chinese and I'm half American. But because I'm Chinese, people like come up to me and stuff, and they're like, "Ni hao." He's like, "Cool, hi." And he's like, "That's like if I was American and I just walked up to someone in a country and was just like, hi." He's like, it's kind of insulting, but at the same time, it's like, okay.
Yeah.
Bailey just dropped a newsletter about like white culture, and she has a really, really great line in that. She says to people that are like American upper middle class white people, other people's cultures are just fun aesthetics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like they're like costumes, and it's like fucked up.
Yeah, it is
nonsense.
But not to the fullest extent. Like, I would say a broad aspect, yes.
A lot of them, not universally.
A lot of people really want to try to like understand.
Yeah. Yeah, like I'm just talking about the ignorant people.
Oh yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah,
and I get a lot of that here.
Yeah, you both are bilingual.
Yeah, the thing is, that goes into like, I think we mentioned this like another episode, but like,
yeah, like
the whole idea of white culture not actually being a culture, like
being
it's more like the absence of culture. So as they, you know, adopt other cultures, whatever aesthetics, it's like because they don't have a thing of their own kind of thing.
Yeah,
which I mean,
I would say, you know, to branch out from that. I don't believe that. I believe what American, white American, like evangelical or even our culture is like McDonald's and stuff like that. That is our culture. Well, no, things, whether people want to believe it or
there
not.
There is culture, but
corporate culture.
I can tell you, like, from a stand up white guy that's not like crazy or anything, 90% of my friends are European. Like, they're either Turkish. Or they're French, or they're Mexican. All of my friends, from me, myself, and I. Like, you want to understand it more. You're interested. It's not...
Wonder Bread.
It's not one bread. It's not white bread, baby. It's like honey and oats bread. It's fucking Hawaiian bread. Whole wheat bread, keto bread, whatever. It doesn't matter. It's like, it's different. You're more invested in learning about these different cultures and things because... it's out of your norm, or, you know, like there's hobbies or like there's more culture and more things that you can learn from somebody else.
If you were to go,
and they're more interesting.
I think like one aspect that proves to me that what we experience in America is a culture and people want to distance themselves from it. Like whether you're a white American or whether you're a different race of American, but you're born and raised in America, or not even just born, if you're predominantly in America, you've embodied American culture, you really notice that it is a culture when you leave for a period of longer than 3-4 weeks. Like when I used to go to Turkey for 3 months at a time, I used to start craving, like, not necessarily craving, but I used to miss the malls. I used to miss the Chinese American food. That's not Chinese food.
Exactly.
It's like a hyper real, you know.
That's a thing in itself right there.
That's American culture.
Because America has taken, and that's what I'm talking about. It's like white people are so interested in so many different ethnicities, they can't come up with their own. So they're literally taking from Chinese, Italian,
all customs,
Turkish,
I think
we don't have something that's like what's American? I guess you could say a fucking cheeseburger, but what else? Like French people have French fries and French toast. There's no authentic dish from America that was created by America.
I don't know about that. It has to be sloppy Joe.
Look that up.
Yeah, we should
look that up.
A hot dog.
Yeah.
Well, I was gonna say that there is a distinction, I think, between at least how people refer to white culture than American culture, because like Germans have culture, they're white. Americans do have culture, they're white. Canadians have culture. Like when we think of like, for example, like like the, you know, white people as like a, this is so like off the thought experience.
Like
white people like as like an not an ethnicity, but as like a race or whatever, right?
White motherfucker.
Usually when we talk about like white culture, it's usually directed towards like the specific ethnicities, you know, like, oh,
no, I'm a white guy.
Like, oh, like, I don't know, like white culture, fucking wooden shoes. That's more of like a Dutch or German culture, or like cheeseburgers or capitalism or whatever. Like, or
I'm just saying like America in general adopts from different cultures.
No, I get that. What I'm trying to say is like, but when we think of like black culture, we specifically think of the entirety of black people, like not just specific African-American don't know, pure African, whatever, or like, or Asian culture is very much like,
people get confused
or like lumped in it's under Chinese,
Or something like that. But with Japanese white culture, white culture inherently doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, it's just
like there's this specific white cultures, but it's inherently up, So I mean, in terms of like American culture, though, that's you know, and obviously, you know, if you see like, you know, Midwest, like, you know, trash towns or whatever, that's like, that kind of screams American culture.
We should take a break.
Yeah.
And we'll be right back with another thought experiment.
Yep. I have like a few that I should connect with that one.
All right. We'll be right back.
Welcome back, everybody. With more thought experiments.
Our thoughts tonight.
We got some drinks. We got some food. We are got some stuffed
wangs.
Up. Some wangs. To keep in line with literally philosophy of mind and technology, as well as the example of Chinese stuff, I have a thought experiment, and not one I made, obviously, but I mentioned this before, but it's the Chinese brain thought experiment. So this, I mentioned this in a conscious episode. Basically, this is, I mean, I'm just going off like what I remember from it. Basically, you have the entire population of China, right? And each one is supposed to kind of represent or hold information basically a particular piece of data, and they're basically supposed to be like neurons, right? So if you can if you were to have some sort of way to connect all these people, aka neurons, into one sort of system, would you get a mind? Would a mind actually emerge from basically all this stuff going on? Would there be a sort of like Chinese brain consciousness that emerges, right? And this is again going with you know, questions of functionalism and materialism and dualisms and stuff like that. So
I feel like it depends on how much you involve yourself.
What do you mean?
Like how much you're dedicated to,
well, basically
having that kind of mindset or learning that kind of mindset, or
it's just, wait, like, we're talking about all of the population of China connected as neurons, right?
If each one was supposed to be like, I'm not sure. I don't remember exactly how they're supposed to be like the neuron, but like they have a sort of information, or they are themselves.
We are one.
The neuron, basically. You might want to look this up for the specifics of that, because I mean, it sounds weird, but basically, if each of them is a neuron, and if there were some sort of systematic way you can connect all of them in this hypothetical thing,
domino effect.
Yeah, well, not really. Like basically, if you were to connect them all,
comes around, goes around.
Kind of. I mean,
one thinking as one entity.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Basically. Yeah. Well, not that everyone would think the same thing as everyone else.
No, but
mostly just like, would there be a new mind that emerges once the neurons all connect?
Like a brain. One giant
brain. That's what it's called. Yeah, a Chinese brain. But basically, and the answers are, you know, if you say yes. Yeah, but basically, if you can mimic the structure of a brain and this massive scale, do you actually have a mind that emerges? Do you have some sort of conscious entity that actually emerges?
I think so. That's why we have countries.
But, well, no. It's beyond just, when I mean a mind, I literally mean a mind. Like, yeah, it's like real consciousness.
You know where I'm getting at, though? Like, you know why I'm saying that?
I think so.
Like, how did we form countries? It's by getting to like one similar understanding of what it should
be. That's just an identity, though.
Identity.
Yeah, that's more like culture. What I mean is like a literal
brain. I know, but it had to grow to some point to get to that point. You know what I mean? So, like, there were neurons firing off in a mass population to get to the point where they do call themselves a country, and this is who we are, and this is what we're, you know what I mean?
I guess, I mean, that's not...
To some extent, but I know what you're saying, like...
Yeah, the experiment is mostly, like, is there a literal thinking new entity that comes into play here? So do you guys have any opinions?
Have you heard of the Gaia hypothesis?
No.
That sounds familiar, actually.
It's or the Gaia theory. It's proposes that living organisms interact with their inorganic surroundings on Earth to form a synergistic, self-regulating complex system that helps maintain and perpetuate conditions for life on the planet. That's kind of
like it.
Similar, but not so much as like a mind.
Yeah.
But what exactly would your definition of a mind be?
Well, so it's usually, it's going to differ, right? For example, this brain, this hypothetical mind, doesn't have, for example, access to like sense data, right? It doesn't have, we're not saying that it has like skin or whatever. It's just a sort of like network of neurons. Entity. So Yeah, so that's a good question, because usually what how I would define mind or consciousness is it's not really awareness the way I mean it is awareness, but basically something that can filter in data, right? So that's why I have multiple I would mostly say no. One of the reasons being, although there is a neural network, there is no ability to intake data. So it can't really function as actual consciousness. But, I mean, if the neurons do support some sort of information, can this hypothetical mind think of something? So it's not really filtering in data, but it's thinking of something. I mean, that would fit the definition of a mind, but I don't think that would work.
Are all parts of the human mind a singular mind? Not the mass of people mind, but like, let's say my mind.
Yeah.
Are all parts of my mind aware of each other?
Well, they're not. Oh, I guess they kind of are. I mean, like, your whole mind as like who you are is aware of your distinct parts, but like different neurons aren't really aware of other neurons in the same way.
Individual groups of people that represent neurons wouldn't be aware of the ones across the country.
Because these are still humans, so they I guess can, but that doesn't really, it doesn't so much matter. I don't think
it wouldn't matter because the mind can't either. I don't know if that's an essential part of it.
I think usually like pieces of data they don't really connect with every other piece of data. They connect with other similar or close by pieces of data.
Yeah, exactly.
And that way you have a sort
like
of thing
if
going
I
on.
Become your friend on Facebook. It's like, do you know who Frankie is?
Yeah. But it's usually,
you know what I mean? It's because the algorithm, because you're friends with him. They assume that you know that person too.
Yeah.
It stems off from one to another to another.
Yeah.
What this kind of reminds me of is like an argument of like nationalism to some extent. Because like if you think of, the Third Reich or Germany in general, I don't know if this was around before the Third Reich, but the I think they called the Volkskörper. Yeah. And it was like the body national. So the individual didn't matter. It was the achievements of the, you know, the nation.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that like a mind, the concept of what our concept of a mind is a little too abstract, you know, because a mind might not actually like even be a thing, you know,
Like
it's just a construct that we've created.
I mean,
the brain is a physical thing. Mm. But the mind is like an abstract creation.
Well,
kind of like a home.
You're basically hitting on two different theories that
the brain is the home. The mind is the painting inside the home.
So basically, when you say the mind might not be a real thing, you're basically going for like Daniel Dennett's eliminativism. Basically, like it's the things that you actually experience are nothing but just the results of physical things, right? And like at that point, a mind doesn't exist. Like he goes to the extent of saying a mind's not actually a real thing. It's just
no, it is.
That's what I would usually counter, but
we don't know.
But
we don't know enough.
Well, the thing is,
but how do you know it at all?
Because all we know is mind.
It's immeasurable.
Dreams.
Well, that doesn't really matter because it's fundamentally mind is the only thing we really do know. Is at least this is Descartes. At least we know we're conscious.
Yeah, to a certain.
But that's
point.
Just experience.
But that's exact. But that's all we have.
So you have experience. You don't have mind.
The mere fact that you are able to process anything or even think, well, it does, there is a distinction where like
it's repetition,
if you don't have any sense experience, you actually still think, and that's like up to debate, but like you're fundamentally aware and that you're fundamentally an experience of a mind, you know, whether the how that connects with the brain is like, you know, that's something else. Yeah,
well, I don't know the about thing
is,
that
thing is you're also kind of not referencing, like you're also kind of connected with like some forms of dualism as well. Like the brain is a physical thing, right? And it's not necessarily the same as mind, right? And that's like, I would agree with that. You can maybe reduce, you know, conscious states to physical states, but the idea of mind is something completely different than the brain, right? They're correlated, they're connected, they're not the same thing. And that's usually what you would get into, maybe like some property dualism, basically like each mental state is connected to a physical state, but they're different properties. So like the mental property is a property of the physical. It's not physical, right? So Daniel Dennett would say, no, your mental conscious experiences, they're physical experiences. The property dualists would say, no, they're rooted in the physical, but they're not, they're not physical. They're literally mind. At the same time, you're kind of going with a little bit of like a little bit of Sartre, actually, Sartre. I never mm-hmm. know how to pronounce his name, but like, and also Heidegger.
Say that again.
Sartre. Yeah. Okay. Sartre. I heard Sartre. It kind of goes with that too. For example,
black
like
metal band, look him up on Spotify. No, I'm just
so what Sartre say?
Well, like, and it's kind of what I was alluding to as well. And this is mostly actually Husserlian, but like the basic factor of intentionality, where a mind is really nothing unless it can actually be conscious of something, right? Yeah. So in that way,
external, right?
Huh?
That's the external.
Kind of, yeah, external, basically. Like in that external way, it kind of refutes idealism to a certain extent. And in that way, it's basically nothing. Like the mind is literally nothing insofar as it is alone. You know, if there is no sense experience or any sort of experience, it's nothing. So in that way, it's not. I mean, it's real, but it's not really real. Fundamentally, like, just the mere fact that we have conscious states.
I don't even think consciousness and the mind are the same.
You don't think so?
No, I think they're two separate things.
So what do you think, like, the difference?
So I think that consciousness and what we consider a mind are two separate things. So conscious, and I don't know.
So this might be a semantic difference at this point, yeah.
I don't know if any of this is true. This is just like from my perspective, it's like consciousness is what... Oh, shit, I had it, damn it. So consciousness is like the concept of awareness and the ability to filter what is being experienced through the brain.
Yeah.
It's like an entity on its own. Not necessarily an entity, like a sentient entity, but it's just...
It's a water filter.
It's not as simple as a process either, because a process is... It's not like theoretical. I guess it's just too abstract for me to really fucking explain with words. Okay. But like, it's just something that is, right? And only you need to be of a certain advanced form to have it on certain levels. Like, we don't know if viruses or amoeba or something, if they experience consciousness in a different form or whatever. But let's say human consciousness, I think it's just like some sort of, I'm going to use entity, but exclude the thing. It's a thing. And the brain or the mind is like consciousness clashing with the brain processing consciousness allows us the ability to think that we are actually something. That our functionality, mind is essentially the clash between the brain and that entity that is consciousness, making us think that mind is actually something, but it's not. It's just the process.
I think
to simplify it, it's a game loading.
It's
calculating what's happening, how it's supposed to go, and it's putting it all like you're just watching the loading screen go from 5 to 10 to 100%.
Uh huh.
That's what that is. It's the CPU processing. It uploads thought from beginning to end.
But I think our processing allows us, because I don't think our idea or our awareness of consciousness is very good.
Okay.
So we like to, as human beings, identify things, and we've identified that clash as mind.
I think so.
That's just my idea.
The thing is, you're hitting on like traditional thoughts, but with like different terminology, basically. Like, I think what you're talking about is essentially reflexive consciousness, or there's another word for it. I mentioned in the podcast before. Not intentionality, like intuitional consciousness. I forget. Usually I hear is like reflexive. So
this has been thought of already.
Kind of. Like, if I'm getting what you're saying correct. Basically, like, okay, so let me run you down like a series of questions. Let's start with question one. Do you think consciousness and the way you define it is rooted in the physical? Like, is it physical cause consciousness?
I don't want to say entirely physical, because there are certain, I guess you could say, like,
that's what I said.
Yeah, yes, like touching the table, that's a physical part of consciousness. But I think there are probably things that we are unaware of, like air, for instance.
Yes. Okay.
Like, and then some things even beyond air.
Okay. Well, what I'm saying is basically
thoughts that you have in your head when you're laying in bed and your mind's running and
but
you can't sleep.
That's the process again.
Okay.
That's just a symptom.
I know, but it's consciousness of like certain things. Say you have like tasks on hand that you know you have to complete.
That's a symptom of what I think we're experiencing.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So
I really want to.
That's the loading screen you were mentioning in my eyes.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Right. So you have this consciousness, and you're saying it's once it sort of becomes aware of its brain state, then that there's this abstract constructed mind. Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Where do you draw the
line? It's considered reflexive consciousness. So usually when people talk about like mind.
Look that up, Jamie.
Usually when people talk about mind, it's sometimes, you know, I think, therefore I am, mind versus whatever.
Usually what he's
talking about with mind is the consciousness in your terminology, right? Yeah. And then the next step in actually abstracting that mind is more like consciousness being able to be it's conscious of itself. That's what reflexive consciousness really is. And so for him, that step is really like a self. Like, so for Descartes, a self is really abstracted from our conscious awareness of our own consciousness, right? And that goes with...
You said conscious. So I can read the...
It says, it's by Eugene Halliday.
Halliday.
Sets out on a way by which we can develop the ability to respond adequately to the demands of life makes us the ability to assimilate the shocks and blows of experience so we can live a whole and balanced life. The way to this balance is through an understanding of the center of our own being, our consciousness, and through this, finding our place in relation to the universe.
Mm-hmm.
In his seminal work, Reflexive Self of Consciousness, he sets out the nature of consciousness and its relation to the world of phenomena being in mankind. For this, he explains how consciousness itself can become reflexive. By this, he means that consciousness becomes completely self-transparent and consciously aware of its own presence and nature.
By the way, this is so funny. I think last episode you said some sort of thing that was like Hegelian. Once again, there's also another Hegelian thought. Yeah, so you might be a Hegelian,
where
really.
Where am I getting this?
Inside Hegel, right? But yeah, so the reflexive consciousness, and you know, a lot of Eastern philosophy also goes into this. Like, for example, like a lot of Eastern like Buddhist doctrines say, like the no self doctrine, like there is no self, mm-hmm. because it is an abstraction, right? I think there is an argument. There's various different arguments to like, do abstract and things actually exist or do they not? I think that gets more complicated. But essentially, what you're saying is reflexive consciousness, right? Yeah, it's basically a mirror. Yeah.
Yes, that's the analogy I was looking for. Zach said it was a mirror.
Yeah, it's also very hicky.
It's kind of like taking it in, bouncing off the mirror inside.
And
the reflection is the mind.
See, this is what it was called, introspective consciousness. It's basically this one author, I think I mentioned it before, he lays out like three different types of consciousness, right? So there's this first part.
What's his name?
Damn, okay. I'm sad that's not it's something not, I came up
Neil,
with.
Neil
dude, philosophy as a mind is so, like, well, as I say that, as I try to make up a theory, and I realize I'm also not new in my theories.
Perception is the brother of consciousness, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, right. And within those three different types of consciousness, there is a difference, for example, as he says, between, like, direct perceiving.
They're there. They're watching. But your mind... your consciousness isn't aware of the bump in the road or something like that, where it triggers in your consciousness to bring you back to where you're fucking supposed to be. You know what I mean? Like
another connection here is also Heidegger. For example, he has a ray to hand. Oh yeah. Cheers. I'll take it later. Here. There you go.
What does that mean? What does that mean for like death, for instance? Let's say when like a sentient being under the properties of reflexive self-consciousness, what happens when that entity dies, do you think? Or where does that lead? Does the consciousness the consciousness would still exist, but the self perception would
that goes on to if you're saying consciousness is caused by physical, then if the body dies, there's no consciousness, then it's dead. But again, there's different theories out there, like some panpsychism and idealism and all that. I think overall, like, it's funny because this connects with my paper too a lot.
The paper.
Yeah, the paper. And now everybody at like, is it a 53? I think it's a 50. Or maybe it's like 45. I don't know. It's something like that.
13 seasons later.
Yeah.
No, I'm just joking.
Yeah. Yeah,
seriously, write the fucking paper so we can read it.
Oh, I have. It's just it's just constantly getting more complex.
On Spotify and Audible. No,
yeah, I mean, like for example, like what I say in that is like people do confuse mind with that reflexive cult self-consciousness a lot, right?
Yeah.
And that's basically my critique of like. So for example, like my critique of Descartes was the same as Heidegger's. Basically, like
Descartes sounds like a black metal band.
That
should be a black metal band.
Descartes.
Sorry, guys. Yeah. I just had to put that in there.
Yeah.
My metal self.
That'd be cool.
That's awesome. You guys
want to start a band called Descartes?
That sounds great.
Oh my god, that'd be awesome.
And our thoughts tonight,
dude. That's like some French abstract fucking Oh my god, abstract black metal. Basically, like, you know, when Descartes talks about like, okay, I have this mind. I know I'm experiencing it in the same process. He's reflexing. You know, he's reflective of it. Yeah. But he does admit there's something going on that is immediate, right? But the problem with that immediacy is, and this is where I kind of get talking in other parts of the paper, is like, it's technically unconscious consciousness because you're not really aware of your awareness. So the consciousness in itself has an unconscious aspect of it, right? Mm-hmm. And the only real fundamental fact during that moment beyond just perception is being, and it is sort of, it's literally just being, right? It's the in cogito, I forget like the Latin of it, like the cogito ergo sum or whatever. There is no proper explanation of sum, of am, you know. There is a sort of like, oh, you're conscious, and then you're conscious of your conscious, but what's before that consciousness, right, is a fundamental being. So that kind of connects with that too a little bit. But
isn't this kind of like a smaller version or a more intimate version of like the Boltzmann brain?
Kind of.
This kind of goes back to your question about the collective. Does the collective create a mind?
So yeah.
Like, it's like you've got the consciousness or the universe's awareness through people in general, and then you have each individual person experiencing. So that's kind of like a mind, actually, the body as a whole, body of people as a whole. And then you have each individual person as like a neuron, and it all in fact like is like a fractal of consciousness.
So I'm obsessed with philosophy of mind. So before I give my answer to the thought experiment, what you're kind of not alluding to, but it's like it connects, is actually a big problem with like panpsychism, for example, like they would think like everything is conscious, right? And if everything is conscious, then why do I only feel like one consciousness, right? Like that's called the combination problem. Is like, if all my atoms and all my every part of me is conscious, right? How is it that they can emerge or not emerge, combine to one consciousness, right? Answer:
unify.
Because panpsychism is incoherent in that aspect. But again, so with for example the Chinese brain experiment, that's a problem. Maybe not so much because it's. Is that really even a brain at that point?
Is that a necessity? That's kind of why I asked, are all the parts aware of each other?
Yeah, I mean...
Is a collective consciousness necessary for a mind or for a whatever mind would be?
I mean,
yes.
A consciousness.
Yes, it is.
Connected.
Yes.
The thing is, it's, if there's questions...
Brain isn't even aware of all of its parts.
No, it's not.
It is.
When you were explaining that to me, you know what I thought of? Playing with musicians.
But that's not real, man. That's like
that's what I'm saying. It's real.
I don't know if it's a collective consciousness.
It is.
I mean, what you're thinking of, I think, is more like
it's different.
It's off like kinesthetics. Like you can read each other's body language, but I'm not aware of how you're experiencing the world right now.
Exactly.
But,
to give you
close,
it's like you both are experiencing the same thing, and you're both conscious of it.
Yeah.
But you're both also in a unnoticed consciousness at the same time. Like you're living in the moment and you're both experiencing the same thing but in different viewpoints, but also at the same time while you're in this consciousness that you're in a subconscious where you're thinking other things.
You're not aware of them.
That's what I'm saying, there's a collective going on, but there's a
you wouldn't be aware of
exactly
it regardless.
And that's what made me think of that is like we're all the same thing from our own perspective, but subconsciously, there's other things going on.
But what you initially said was that there has to be a collective consciousness.
There is,
to a certain extent. But I mean, is it understood? Are we aware of, like, the consciousnesses?
We aren't. We
have
aren't,
to be. What I'm explaining as a collective consciousness is that they're all aware of each other
in the
sense that they're very. Not subconsciously, but consciously aware of each other.
I feel like that is 100% true. Well, and that kind of setting, like when you're playing a show or something like that.
I think that's more subconscious. Like it makes more sense subconsciously, but from a very conscious point of view, like I can't see things from your perspective.
Exactly.
That would be an aware consciousness.
And you wouldn't know of them until after the experience has been said and done.
So you think I am aware of it?
I'm aware that you're aware that we experienced the same thing, but we won't know each other's perspectives until we have a conversation after our experience.
And Hegel came up from the grave and he said, thank you.
Yeah.
Exactly. As your dad said,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. So through the connectivity of like,
it's just yeah, like, or us, Fichtian, really.
It's like
yeah.
us both being at a blackjack table, you get one hand, I get another. And then like, after it's all said and done, 7 hours later, we go to the hotel and talk about it.
So that's what a collective consciousness would
eventually get.
Well, collective consciousness, as far as I know, is usually based on ideas of like, it's just sort of like shared material within everybody's subconscious. That's usually what it's related to, right? If I'm not mistaken.
I think it's called a conversation.
Well, I mean, maybe.
No, I'm just joking. Well, but you know what I mean?
I don't waste my time on Jung, really.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was like, it's very Jungian.
But you know what I mean, though, right?
Yeah, I think so. But going back to what you were saying about, like, if the parts are conscious, you know, whole conscious, whatever.
Yeah. Y'all know what you're supposed to do. You know what your job is. And there's a collective in it.
Right. So for example, the Chinese experiment, the Chinese brain experiment is basically like, it's actually more of an experiment of panpsychism, really, is... if each neuron was conscious, how would it resolve at the end? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm not sure how would I answer that thought experiment, if I'm being honest. Like, I think one, it, because of the lack of intentionality, because of the lack of that brain being able to process other experiences and not experience of data, it's not really conscious.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Because it lacks intentionality. Intentionality mean in this context means being about something.
It's too great of a barrier.
Yeah. But I do think if it did have that capability, it could be, because I do think the abstract entity of that constructed mind or consciousness, whatever, has being to it. And that's like the whole thing with my paper is like, so I do think it has the potentiality of consciousness, but it needs that intentional factor.
That's what I'm saying to Zach's theory is that like, I can't experience that jamming session as I can understand your experience of it when you tell me, but I can't directly experience it. And I think that's the barrier of what makes it a conscious collective consciousness, but it can be understood on a subconscious level because we are experiencing the same phenomena in a relative space and time.
Yeah. From different perspectives.
Oh, arguably.
Yeah. All right. Well, we should take a break.
Yeah. All right. We'll be right back.
We're back with our thoughts tonight.
So what? Zach had a thought experiment that he kind of came up with by his own experience, which I thought it was pretty interesting. So you want to explain that to us?
Yeah, I'll sum it up. So I was walking to work today at 9 a.m. this morning, and this guy is riding a BMX bike, and he's from afar. I notice this guy's trouble, okay? He's... screaming and yelling profanities at people that are like homeless that don't have anywhere to go or anything like that, you know. So he's like, "Oh, I'll fuck you up," da da da, like yells at this guy, and I see him from like 20 feet away, and I'm like, "Oh, okay, great, I'm the next victim." Like I can already foresee my future. And then as he's passing me, he like sticks his neck out to where he's like a foot away from me, like. Definitely consciously going out of his way to like, I don't know if the guy had a bad day or if he's just trying to entice people to get into a fight or whatever, but he's also not all there. Like something's off. The guy looked like he had nothing to lose. And me being me, I don't want to engage in something like that unless I absolutely have to. Not only that, even if I did, I wouldn't, because it's between two courthouses. So I'd be an idiot to do such a thing. But the question that crossed my mind right after that guy passed me in a millisecond was, why do I, as a human being, attract so many people with like some kind of mental disability, or they're just off, like very strange, unique individuals come up to me every single year for as long as I've known? And why do I attract these kind of people? Why am I a magnet to these kind of people? Why do I have to have long conversations with these people and hear their whole entire life story?
Like, it doesn't happen to everybody. And the reason why I asked you to talk about this was because like there's so many possible different like variables that that could be. And one that I mentioned was
smoking a cigarette.
I want to hear your point of view first, because mm-hmm. I have an idea, but I want to hear your point of view, Shik, first.
So basically, yeah. So why do you attract? I don't think I'm using the word probably here, but it's kind of circumstantial, I suppose. Like it's, you know, I'm not saying it's you specifically, but in general, like people attract people of a certain type, dependent on who they are and their life experiences or whatever. So like, I don't know, if you smoke weed, you're going to meet other people who smoke weed, et cetera. So also like where you live.
If you're smoking a cigarette and standing in place, not even smoking a cigarette. Me and him were talking about this earlier. If you stand still in one spot and you stay there for more than 15 minutes, you're bound to run into, or someone's bound to run into you that wants to spark up a conversation with you out of
fucking up a cigarette.
That's
weird.
I remember a few years ago, I was like smoking a cigar like next to a river, and some like guy came over, and if I wasn't smoking something, I'm sure he would have been like,
did you feel like you spawned though, like an NPC in Skyrim?
Kind of, yeah. But it was
like, where the fuck did you come from?
The thing was like, you know, if I wasn't smoking anything, I don't think he would have offered anything. But I ended up smoking some weed with a stranger and drinking a beer. Like it was really odd, right?
Yeah.
But because you can meet anybody, random people all throughout your day, but the people who you're gonna sort of at least interact with are people who are at least some way similar to you. And also it's also like, you know, where you live, you know, all these other circumstantial situations.
Not
I think.
Even where you live, where you are in that point in time.
Yeah. So
where
it's
where you're standing in that spot.
Yeah, your setting overall. And I think that's that's basically it. You know, I think it depends on who you are. You know, I mean, again, you will meet random people of all sorts of different types, but the ones who you actually interact with are a little different, I think.
It happens to me a lot more frequently than I'd like.
Mm-hmm.
And me knowing who I am, I'm like, have morals and shit. And like, someone's like, can I have a cigarette? And they got like a blanket on them, and I know that they're homeless. I'm going to give them a cigarette and like $20 or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's like, I'm talking about the ones where you do that, and then they're still standing around for 45 minutes telling you your life story, expecting more, and then they get mad and crazy at you, and they start threatening you after you gave them food or money or what, you know what I mean? Like, I start to question why I am a magnet, why I'm the refrigerator to the magnet.
See, it's not necessarily a magnet, but here.
I want to bring up this, because it immediately made me think of this this policing or deterrence theory, or a crime theory. I think it's called the crime problem triangle. They talk about it a lot in criminal justice. It's like one of the main theories, because it encompasses so much and it's like really effective in assessing crime, is that there's three sides to how a crime happens. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a crime. This is with like many interactions. A lot of this has to do, like rape is a huge rape is a crime, obviously, but you could like chalk this up to other social interactions as well. There's three elements to it: opportunity, ability, and desire. So it says the elements a criminal needs to commit the crime are his or her own desire, a target,
and the ability,
and the opportunity to commit the crime. So the target, there can't be a guardian, essentially, that is one thing. So that goes into the opportunity. And this is why people talk about like dogs being really effective as guardians, even though they can't necessarily protect you from like a weapon or a gun.
Talk about consciousness right there.
It is to some extent a deterrent when you're walking down the street, especially if you're a woman.
And it depends on the dog that you have, too. Mm-hmm. Say if you had a chihuahua, someone's more bound to come up to you.
Yeah, but people can see the innocence in something
but,
like
yeah.
that.
If you had a Rottweiler, I don't think they're going to even try to...
That's like, a stronger deterrent. Yeah.
Or if they had a Doberman, no way. Pitbull, no
unlikely,
way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it kind of goes down to that with you, whereas like you show yourself as an opportunity, not necessarily for harm.
Yeah.
But you show yourself as an opportunity in a lot of ways for these people. You probably look approachable is one.
Yeah.
I think it has something also to do with aura. like the aura that you produce, mm-hmm. especially when you're standing alone and by yourself. I think of it like as a lighthouse, and the other person is a ship in the ocean, and they don't see any other thing but the lighthouse.
Yeah.
So they're like a moth going to a flame, essentially. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's the same. In my eyes, that's how I view it in situations like that. There's been 200 different times where I've been out in the alleyway. I go and dump the trash, and then I go and spark up a cigarette, and I'm thinking my thoughts. I'm by myself, our thoughts tonight, whatever the fuck. You know what I mean? Like, I'm doing my own thing, being me, and then literally out of nowhere, NPC spawns. And then, hey, mm-hmm. can I have a cigarette? Hey, mm-hmm. let me tell you my whole life story. And then they get, like, they go into lunacy mode. Yeah. Like a Looney Tune.
You do seem like I've known you for so long. It's hard for me to tell.
I'm an approachable person.
You seem like you're very approachable.
Yeah, I feel like I am too, but...
You met Zach more recently than I have.
Oh, yeah, super. Approachable? Yeah, what's the word? So, I compare, for example, you guys, and also like Eddie, for example, like to like my high school friends, because each of you have like a correlate, which is really funny.
A
correlate with like my high school friends, which is really funny. Yeah. And like, it's basically the same thing. You're approachable. Like you're like the friend that, you know, that I had in high school. It's the same thing, basically. Like, oh,
I'm
I can talk.
Homie.
Yeah. You know, there's some correlates, but yeah, you're very approachable. I was going to say though, is like, usually people will gravitate towards, let's say they're in the street, you know.
More approachable people.
Yeah, more approachable people, also like what they know, you know, so it doesn't even have to be another human being, but like...
You're white, bitch.
But like, yeah. Well, maybe that's a good theory.
And what you look like.
Yeah, but it's also... Yeah, what you do, but also just the mere fact that you're a human being that you can actually interact with, and like, and people are social creatures.
But
so.
I'm saying in a negative form, like what I experienced today, not doing anything, listening to Red Hot Chili Peppers on my way to work, and it was in a negative approach.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hey, buddy, can I have a cigarette? It was like, I'm going to fuck you up too, white boy. Yeah. Like,
but the approachableness also extends to that. Like, he wouldn't do that to somebody like that was the equivalent, a human equivalent of a Rottweiler.
Yeah.
He
exactly.
did it to you because you seemed
Mike
that
Tyson.
Harmless.
I stood
to
out.
Him.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Even though you could defend yourself, like, he got the sense like, this guy's just going to walk by me.
Yeah.
He's not
going
to pick on somebody that he thinks, like, the opportunity and his desire are there. And the target is there, and the target is like unassuming. They're not going to come after him, even though he's making assumptions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think whatever happened to him, I'm sure he's got his own reasons to be that way.
Exactly. That's what you're saying earlier, too. Like,
it's complicated.
There's some kind of motive behind it.
Yeah. He's pissed about something.
Yeah,
and it's unfortunate.
He's pissed about his own life.
Yeah.
But he's verbally expressing it to whoever crossed his path.
Yeah.
And I just happen to be one of those people. Mm-hmm. But to me, like, the asshole part of me is like, I could kick this motherfucker off his bike, off his huffy bike, and be like, who's the bitch now? You know what I mean? Like, I could have done that. But I wasn't going to do that because I have, like, a sense of mind and, like, some fucking awareness of what's going on around me and where I'm at, and you know, like, I also am aware that this person is not aware of his own consciousness or whatever the fuck's going on compared to, like, you could see it broad as day. You know what I mean? Like, you're like, this person's obviously dealing with some stuff.
Yeah.
He's
doing the reverse. Would you approach them? No, you wouldn't, because they're not approachable, because they're, you know.
I wouldn't
aggressive.
Do that. I'd deal with my own stuff on my own. But like,
would you ask him for a cigarette? That doesn't seem approachable in that sense.
If I was homeless, I'd be asking people for cigarettes all the damn time.
Well, of course,
that guy.
No, I know what I do. I'd ask him for money so I could buy a pack of cigarettes. A cigarette. I'd be smart about it. You know what I mean? I go live at the homeless shelter.
Yeah.
I'd use computers. I'd save up enough money to use a computer at a FedEx to file for my dividend and then send it to the homeless shelter.
Speaking of homeless. I don't want to cut you off. Sorry. I didn't
no,
want to
you're
cut
good,
off
you're
that.
Good.
Speaking of homeless, like, I know everybody uses that term, but I've been like trying to think about it. Like, to say homeless is almost like, I don't want to say it's denigrating because it's not necessarily denigrating, but
no, man, they're free. They're like America,
but like houseless. Unhoused is like unhoused. I'm trying to adopt that term because it's like a home. You could have a home anywhere. You don't necessarily need a house.
Yeah, you just have to have a community. I mean, a
community.
Yeah,
and these people have stronger communities than some of the people like in your neighborhood, Zach.
Yeah.
Those people are individualist assholes.
Yeah.
They don't have a home. They have a house.
Yeah. Yeah.
I lived on the streets, they've got a home.
Yeah. Yeah. I lived on East Side and everyone was, it was a lot more ghetto, but everyone was a lot more open. Look out for your neighbor. Down neighbor is my neighbor. If someone tries to hurt you, I'll hurt them. You know what I mean? Like there's like a code of ethics and like respect within the neighborhood. I'm down with that. That's cool.
Yeah, for sure.
I love that. I like talking to my neighbors.
It's
like,
very human.
I like having a foundation around my surroundings. And then I moved to a nice neighborhood, a white suburban neighborhood. And I'm a white guy, dude. And I grew up on Southside. Like, I'm all about it. I know all about it. But the older you get, you realize like how cut off everyone is and how secluded everybody is. And no one wants to know who you are or who your neighbor is.
Yeah.
It's like, to me, it seems like a lot of people in my neighborhood are scarce. Individual neighborhood. Oh, you hit my truck. Oh, nice to know you. Oh, we'll cook hot dogs next week. Like some, you know what I mean? Some kind of bad situation turned into a good situation.
And that's almost like obligatory. Yeah. Like, they feel, like, obliged to make that interaction. And I remember we were, like, parked in front of your house in your new neighborhood recently. And I was, like, I was saying something along the lines of, I don't want to tell that whole story. But anyway, like, the more rich you become, the more you isolate yourself. And, like, the pinnacle of that is like, Jeff Bezos going out into space. Like, he's the second or most rich guy in the world.
He's first.
And he's trying to really abandon people. Yeah. He's gone to the suburbs. He's gone beyond the suburbs. And now he's, like, trying to go to space. Like, is that what affluence means in our world?
Trying to get to the next level of consciousness.
Just trying to be more isolated.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's really strange.
I mean, you can have some, like,
it's also crazy to think
some conclusions from that. I was gonna say, like, you can have some conclusions from that. Like, do people really only need people for a utility purpose? So once they don't actually need people, then you know, what's
the
point?
Say just because he has money, he still needs people.
I mean, of course he does, but like,
he doesn't think he
everyone
does.
Needs a friend. No, he does. No.
He could buy people.
Yeah,
he could buy people, but it's not the same thing.
It's just
like the one thing that poor people. You can't afford anything, you can't do anything, and there's a struggle and you're sad about it. But when you're rich, you can get anything and do anything you want, but the excitement after a while diminishes to the point where you might as well be fucking poor because you can do anything and everything you want to. There's no struggle.
Yeah.
And being a middleman, you realize that it's the perfect balance. Because you go through all the trials and tribulations and all the struggles and all the things, and you get enough money to do the thing that you want to do and the dream or whatever your goal that you set, you went through, you jumped over the what's
hurdle.
It called? The hurdle, the marathon. You went through it. You experienced it. And by the end of the fucking trial, it's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Going through that experience is what makes it worth it.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you're too rich,
you don't have anything.
That doesn't exist.
That's a good point.
It's just like, oh, I got money, done. I got
it. So you think that's why his desire isn't necessarily to isolate himself, but it's like he's trying to find hurdles to jump over.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes more sense, actually.
Not only that, but like that's the same relationship with a person that has no money whatsoever because all they do is struggle and all they know is suffering and they're just as sad as the richest man. The more struggles you go through to get to the goal makes it worth it.
Yeah, money is nothing.
Yeah, I know.
Literally, I mean, it's based, especially now with the fiat system, like money is nothing. It's a construct.
You're the one thing you said there, you watched Squid Game.
Yeah.
I forgot the conversation. What was it like? Spoilers. When the creator of Squid Game says, what does he say? He's like, oh, you both, you know what the common thing between the rich man and the poor man is?
Yeah, yeah.
And I forget what he says, but it's like, basically what you were saying in a way. It's just funny. It's a Squid Game connection there.
But it's true.
Yeah, you're right. You know? Should we bring up another thought experiment?
I have a short one. It's not really a thought experiment, but it's kind of a thing.
Whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I had another one too, but I think that's fair. So
Like a recycling.
Let's do final thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah. Final thoughts.
Not me.
I'll start tonight. Okay.
I was like,
you want to finish that thought then?
Yeah.
Some dum dum do.
Yeah, I mean, so that was my end of that thought, I suppose.
That was a great rant.
So final thoughts. I'll start final thoughts since I always force these guys to follow us on Twitter at Crucem Sanctum and stay tuned for the next episode.
What's your final thoughts?
My final thought. Oh man, final thought. I don't know. Being is very fundamental. It's very, very fundamental, and I think it's. As someone who used to be so obsessed with consciousness, I think the realization that being is more fundamental is a really profound idea. And I think Heidegger, I think Meinong, I think those guys. I don't know. My final thought, basically. Enjoy some thought experiments, guys.
My final thoughts are be aware of your consciousness. Be alert of your surroundings. And not be only aware of yourself, but be aware of other people. And their consciousness and what they have to offer. And also, if you don't know who Noam Chomsky is, look him up because he's great. And that's our thoughts tonight. Good night.
Our thoughts tonight.
Thoughts tonight.
Oh, to write a song that has no meaning at all, that doesn't touch a personal nerve or heed a social call, that knows no up or down, that has no right or wrong, that doesn't need a reason to waste some time with song, just like that old time rock and roll with the easy chords and a touch of soul. Give me old time rock and roll, and I'll sing ba 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 ba. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Oh, to sing a song that doesn't let it all hang out, that doesn't wave any flag or have any slogan to shout, that knows no east or west, that has no left or right, that doesn't throw any stones or look for any fight, just like that old time rock and roll with the easy chords and a touch of soul. Give me old time rock and roll, and I'll sing ba 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 ba. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Just to write a song that won't mend a broken heart, that won't woo you like a lover or promise a brand new start, that doesn't preach of rain and fire or heed any higher call, that doesn't need a reason to mean nothing at all, just like that old time rock and roll with the easy chords and a touch of soul. Give me old time rock and roll, and I sing ba 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 ba. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Just like that old time rock and roll with the easy chords and a touch of soul. Give me old time rock and roll, and I sing ba 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 ba. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Ba 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 ba. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Ba 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 ba. Whoa, whoa, whoa.